Welcome to the student podcast of Visual Cultures of South Asia, a seminar course offered at Institute of Asian and African Studies, Humboldt. I'm Salma Siddiq, leader of this seminar course, and in the past 16 weeks, in the winter semester of 2016-2017, we have looked at visual culture in India, Pakistan and Bangladesh in terms of its critical tendencies and debates. My first student presenter is Teresa Suski, who's a final year MA student just about to finish her degree, and she's going to talk about media and political mobilization on the Ayodhya controversy. Hi, Teresa, and welcome to the VISCA podcast.
Hi. Thank you. Should I start?
Yeah.
Okay. The Ramayana is one of the best known epics in South Asia and is still today very well known in different spheres of life. Not only art and culture, but politics as well. So the question arises how the Ramayana continued being present and which developments encouraged its political legitimacy. So how can this epic have such an active role within the political events, especially around the Ayodhya controversy? The idea behind is a so-called historization of myth, which means that the figure of God Ram has been made a historical person by media and politics. So did Advani, the former leader of the BJP, when he dressed up like God Ram, bearing his attributes, bow and arrow, during election campaigns in the early 90s. This crucial example shows the instrumentalization of God Ram being made a political instrument and in the scope of these campaigns named as India's greatest national hero. So what we see is an instrumentalization of the Ramayana and the myth around Ram, which is being made a historical reality. The range and variety of media utilized in the so-called Ram Janmabhoomi movement revealed its political sophistication and pointed to Hindu nationalists' ability to exploit the complexities of a given cultural terrain to maximum effect and became a question of Hindu identity. A weekly screening of the Ramayana on television between January 1987 and July 1988 increased the public awareness of the Ayodhya controversy. So the televised epic had generated for the first time the consumption of religious simultaneously on a large scale and in some way naturalized Hinduism as India's religion. Remarkable was the degree of religious worship and devotion that broadcasts provoked among viewers, which ranged from pujas in front of the TV sets by burning incense before the screen to purification baths before the broadcast. Furthermore, an aspirated reconstruction of the temple at the place of the Babri Mosque, which is supposed to be Ram's mythological birthplace, was being made a main topic of the elections in the early 90s by the BJP. A call for the donation of bricks for the temple reconstruction equally involved Indians in and outside India. Media coverage was a constitutive part of the movement. Encouragement, of course, urged participants on and brought recruits and supporters. But criticism of the movement was welcome too. Media criticism confirmed the importance of the campaign goals and preserved the appearance that more had to be achieved. The movement was possible through encouraging awareness and emotions, while politics and media led towards mass participation. An important factor are so-called hurt sentiments and hurt religious feelings of the Hindus. So the violent act against the Babri Mosque and Muslim population could be seen as some kind of emotional reaction.
Thank you so much, Teresa. Our next presenter is Lisa Neubert-Damrakar. She is an MA student in her first semester and she's going to talk about copycat or Indianization, how Hollywood influences Bollywood. Welcome, Lisa.
Thank you. Let me start with a quotation of Pratamesh Menon, who says, if you point out to any new Bollywood release, you can bet that there existed a Hollywood original somewhere down the line. Now, this quotation perfectly illustrates how Bollywood experiences a shift towards a new internationalism. But as numbers are usually more convincing, let me give you some facts on this claim. In 2008, 46% of all Bollywood movies were set to be copies. Why do Bollywood filmmakers produce movies so closely connected to an already existing narrative? Can we speak of Bollywood as a copycat, or should we rather talk of an Indianization? In this sequence of this podcast, I want to share some reasons behind the act of copying Hollywood movies in Bollywood land. Here's an example. Hadil Jopia Karega, staring Salman Khan, and the US original, Why You Were Sleeping, staring Sandra Bullock. Both storylines are about a person who is saved from an oncoming train and falls into a coma. His savior is then assumed to be his partner, with whom he or she eloped. But what led the Indian director Raj Chandwar to this act of copying? Here are some thoughts. First of all, Hollywood movies are simply copied out of commercialized reasons and the low risk Bollywood filmmakers are facing, because known movie plots tend to be equally successful. Furthermore, copied movies also constitute a national identity. They render distinct notions of Indianness within a global context and stabilize ideologies that embody the culture of India. What is also important to note is that unsuccessful movies leave filmmakers often indebted. To avoid flops and debt, Hollywood copies are made in hope of gaining similar amounts of profits. Lastly, Bollywood copies are also setting a sign against the hegemony of Hollywood. Can you imagine that Bollywood is still considered inferior to Hollywood? Copies are usually produced in a low budget and dialogues are merely translated. However, you will notice more tensions, more emotion, and just a lot more drama in the Bollywood copy. We got shot-for-shot remakes, reimagined copies, and adapted copies, in which copies are culturally adapted, for example, songs are added. All these aspects of copying and adaptations are tightly connotated to meanings of power and hierarchy. So one might ask why Hollywood has not taken any action against Bollywood so far. Well, firstly, we must be aware of the unawareness of Hollywood due to a limited audience in its own country. What is more, the copyright law enforcement in India is rather poor. There is a fight against piracy, but there is no protection of the idea itself. Is Bollywood running out of new ideas and going through a creative death, as Mahesh Bhatt puts it? I argue no, and here's why. I see copies and the Indianization as a strategic tool in the film industry to ensure profits. According to Jeff Koch, Hollywood movies are remade based on a distinct Bollywood formula of song, dance, costumes, religious ideologies, gender roles, and cultural standards. The recreating points of distinction and comparison present Bollywood as a local cinema by representing national identities and values and globalize narratives and build up international audiences. Thus, using the word copy for a remake would imply that Bollywood is a cheap plagiarism of Hollywood and affirm the film industry as an industry of hegemony and power. The key to success is rather to Indianize Hollywood movies. And as we reach the end of this podcast sequence, I just want to add that globalization is never a one-way street. It functions mutually, as we can see in Leap Year, which is supposed to be based on Jab We Met, or Pearl Harbor, that closely reminds us of Sangam. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa. We now move on to our last presenter, Priska Kumaromi, who's in her first semester doing MA History. And she's going to talk about post-independence popular Hindi cinema in the Eastern Bloc during the 1950s. Welcome to the podcast, Priska.
Thank you. I'd like to start with a personal anecdote to explain my interest in the film Avara, The Vagabond, which I'm going to be focusing on, and its cultural impact in the former Eastern Bloc. When my grandmother first met my boyfriend, she remarked how much she thought he looked like Raj Kapoor. And as a teenager in socialist Romania, she had seen the film Awara several times at the cinema, and like many of her friends, had had a crush on the star and director Raj Kapoor. In fact, she knew the movie so well that even now, after more than 60 years, when we watched the film together last Christmas, she still remembered the words to all the songs. To give you an idea about the extent of the popularity of this film in the Eastern Bloc, when it was shown at the first Indian Film Festival in Moscow in 1954, it drew 63.7 million viewers, which is more than any other domestic or foreign film in that entire decade. Raj Kapoor and Nargis, the stars of the film, became huge celebrities in the USSR and the Eastern Bloc, and were welcomed as state dignitaries in various countries. People named their children after them and had pen pals in India with which they discussed the latest star gossip. So why were post-independence Bollywood films so popular in the Eastern Bloc, and how did this connection come about? With the death of Stalin in 1953, there was a general political thaw and the USSR began to open up to the outside world. There was a shift in attitude towards India. Where it had been labelled a nationalist bourgeois state, it was now being praised for its socialist leanings and what was perceived as genuine efforts towards the uplift of its population. Filmmakers in Bombay at this time, such as Raj Kapoor, were especially interested in using film to address social issues. Keeping in mind the political context of the Cold War, the USSR was keen on using cultural diplomacy to pursue friendly relations and peaceful coexistence with India. At the same time, India was keen on this exchange and on promoting a positive image of the relatively new nation internationally. However, while the state censors in the USSR praised the social themes of these films, what resonated the most with audiences were the portrayal of romance, love, and emotion. Bollywood movies moved away from Stalinist socialist realism, which had shown society as it should be, not as it was, and instead told sincere and truthful stories from the everyday about, as Soviet actor Boris Babochkin put it, quote, real, hardworking, honest people striving for happiness and justice. One cinema goer described how the arrival of Bollywood films, quote, opened up a new world. This new world also included glamour and spectacle. Dance scenes were especially popular as they provided an escape from the material scarcity of a war-ravaged USSR. After years of seeing mainly hardy peasants and workers on screen, beautiful and glamorous stars were a welcome novelty. A quick YouTube search reveals the enduring fascination with 1950s Bollywood in the former Eastern Bloc. Avara has been reworked into wedding song repertoires, TV talent shows, and pop songs from Romania to Kazakhstan. While the majority of information about this transnational cultural exchange is anecdotal, such as my own grandmother's story, it is certainly an area that warrants further research. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Krista. And with Raj Kapoor in the Eastern Bloc, we come to the end of our podcast. Thank you for listening.